This thing is ancient.
It is in a junkyard, said Peony.
I'm serious. I've never seen anything like it.
Cinder ran a hand along a rubber cable. The light flashed back and forth as Iko's sensor scanned the engine from above.
Any useful parts?
Good question. Cinder's vision tinted blue as she connected to her netlink.
Could you read me the VIN by the windshield?
She searched the number as Peony read it to her and had the hover's blueprint downloaded in minutes, the display creating an overlaid image on top of the engine above her.
Seems to be fairly intact, she murmured, running her fingertips along a cluster of wires over her head.
She followed them with her eyes, tilting her head to trace the path from hoses to pulleys to axles, trying to decipher how it all fit together, how it all worked.
This is so cool.
I'm bored, said Peony. Sighing, Cinder searched for the mag belt on the blueprint, but a green error message flashed in her vision. She tried just magnet, and then just belt, finally receiving a hit. The blueprint lit up a rubber band wrapped around a series of gears, encapsulated by a metal cover, something called a timing belt. Frowning, Cinder reached up and felt for the bolts and lock washers that attach the cover to the engine block. She thought timing belts hadn't been used since internal combustion had become obsolete. Gasping, she craned her neck to the side. In the deep shadows beneath the vehicle, she could make out something round beside her, connected to the bars overhead. A wheel.
It's not a hover. It's a car. A gasoline car.
Seriously? Said Peony. I thought real cars were supposed to be, I don't know, classy. Indignation flared in Cinder's chest.
It has character, she said, feeling for the tire's treads.
So, said Iko a second later, does this mean we can't use any of its parts?
Ignoring her, Cinder hungrily scanned the blueprint before her. Oil pan, fuel injectors, exhaust pipes.
It's from the second era.
Fascinating. Not, said Peony.
She suddenly screeched, launching herself back from the car. Cinder started so fast she whapped her head on the front suspension.
Peony, what? A rat just came out of the window. A big, hairy, fat one. Oh, gross.
Groaning, Cinder settled her head back into the dirt, massaging her forehead. That made two head injuries in one day. At that rate, she was going to have to buy a new control panel, too.
It must have been nesting in the upholstery. We probably scared it.
We scared it? Peony's voice carried a shudder with it.
Can we go now, please?
Cinder sighed.
Fine.
Dismissing the blueprint, she squirmed out from beneath the car, accepting Iko's offered grippers to stand.
I thought all the surviving gasoline cars were in museums, she said, brushing the cobwebs from her hair.
I'm not sure I would label it a survivor, said Iko, her sensor darkening with disgust. It looks more like a rotting pumpkin.
Cinder shut the hood with a bang, sending an impressive dust cloud over the android.
What was that about having a fantastic imagination? With some attention and a good cleaning, it could be restored to its former glory.
She caressed the hood. The car's dome-shaped body was a yellow-orange shade that looked sickly under Iko's light, a color that no one in modern times would choose. But with the antique style of the vehicle, it bordered on charming. Rust was creeping up from the hollow beneath the shattered headlights, arching along the dented fender. One of the back windows was missing, but the seats were intact, albeit mildew-covered and torn and probably home to more than just rodents. The steering wheel and dash seemed to have suffered only minor damage over the years.
Maybe it could be our escape car.
Peony peered into the passenger's side window.
Escape from what?
Audrey, New Beijing.
We could get out of the Commonwealth altogether. We could go to Europe.
Cinder rounded the driver's side and scrubbed the dirt from the window with her glove. On the floor inside, three petals winked up at her. Though hovers were all controlled by computer, she had read enough about old technology to know what a clutch was and even had a basic idea of how to operate one.
"This hunk of metal wouldn't get us to the city limits," said Peony.
Stepping back, Cinder dusted off her hands. They were probably right. Maybe this wasn't a fantasy vehicle. Maybe it wasn't their key to salvation. But somehow, someday, she would leave New Beijing. She would find a place where no one knew who she was, or what she was.
"Plus, we couldn't afford the gasoline," continued Aiko. "We could trade in your new foot and still not be able to afford enough fuel to get out of here. Plus, the pollution fines. Plus, I'm not getting in this thing. There's probably decades worth of rat droppings under those seats."
Peony cringed. "Ew." Cinder laughed. "All right, I get it. I won't make you guys push the car home."
"Phew, you had me worried," said Peony.
She smiled because she hadn't really been worried and flipped her hair off her shoulder. Cinder's eye caught on something. A dark spot below Peony's collarbone, visible just above the collar of her shirt. "Hold still," she said, reaching forward. Peony did the opposite, panicking and swiping at phantoms on her chest.
"What? What is it? A bug? A spider?"
"I said hold still." Cinder grabbed Peony by the wrist, swiped at the spot, and froze. Dropping Peony's arm, she stumbled back.
"What? What is it?"
Peony tugged on her shirt, trying to see, but then spotted another spot on the back of her hand. She looked up at Cinder, blood draining from her face.
A rash?" she said. "From the car?"
Cinder gulped and neared her with hesitant footsteps, holding her breath. She reached again for Peony's collarbone and pulled the fabric of her shirt down, revealing the entire spot in the moonlight. A splotch of red, rimmed with bruise purple. Her fingers trembled. She pulled away, meeting Peony's gaze. Peony screamed. Chapter 5. Peony's shrieks filled the junkyard, seeping into the cracks of broken machinery and outdated computers. Cinder's auditory interface couldn't protect her from the shrill memory, even as Peony's voice cracked and she dissolved into hysteria. Cinder stood trembling, unable to move, wanting to comfort Peony, wanting to run away.
How was this possible? Peony was young, healthy. She couldn't be sick.
Peony cried, brushing repeatedly at her skin, the spots. Cinder's netlink took over, as it did in moments when she couldn't think for herself, searching, connecting, feeding information to her she didn't want. Leptomosis, the blue fever, worldwide pandemic, hundreds of thousands dead, unknown cause, unknown cure.
Peony.
She tentatively reached forward, but Peony stumbled back, swiping at her wet cheeks and nose.
Don't come near me! You'll get it! You'll all get it!
Cinder retracted her hand. She heard Aiko at her side, fan whirring. Saw the blue light darting over Peony, around the junkyard, flickering. She was scared.
I said get back!
Peony collapsed to her knees, hunching over her stomach. Cinder took two steps away, then lingered, watching Peony rock herself back and forth in Aiko's spotlight.
I need to call an emergency hover to
come and take you away. Peony didn't respond. Her whole body was rattling. Cinder could hear her teeth chattering in between the wails. Cinder shivered. She rubbed at her arms, inspecting them for spots. She couldn't see any, but she eyed her right glove with distrust, not wanting to remove it, not wanting to check. She stepped back again. The junkyard shadows loomed toward her. The plague. It was here, in the air, in the garbage. How long did it take for the first symptoms of the plague to show up? Or... She thought of Chang Sasha at the market. The terrified mob running from her booth. The blare of the sirens. Her stomach plummeted. Was this her fault? Had she brought the plague home from the market? She checked her arms again, swiping at invisible bugs that crawled over her skin, stumbled back. Peony's sobs filled her head, suffocating her. A red warning flashed across her retina display, informing her that she was experiencing elevated levels of adrenaline. She blinked it away, then called up her comm link with a writhing gut and sent a simple message before she could question it. Emergency. Tai Hong District Junkyard. Leadimosis. She clenched her jaw, feeling the painful dryness of her eyes. A throbbing headache told her that she should be crying, that her sobs should match her sister's.
Why? Peony said, her voice stammering. What did I do?
You didn't do anything, said Cinder. This isn't your fault. But it might be mine.
What should I do? Aiko asked, almost too quiet to be heard.
I don't know, said Cinder. A hover is on its way. Peony rubbed her nose with her forearm. Her eyes were rimmed and red.
You need to go. You'll catch it.
Feeling dizzy, Cinder realized she'd been breathing too shallowly. She took another step away before filling her lungs.
Maybe I already have it. Maybe it's my fault you caught it. The outbreak at the market today. I didn't think I was close enough, but... Peony, I'm so sorry.
Peony squeezed her eyes and buried her face again. Her brown hair was a mess of tangles hanging across her shoulders, stark against her pale skin. A hiccup, followed by another sob.
I don't want to go.
I know. It was all Cinder could think to say. Don't be scared. It will be all right. She couldn't lie. Not when it would be so obvious.
I wish there was something...
She stopped herself. She heard the sirens before Peony did.
I'm so sorry.
Peony swiped at her nose with her sleeve, leaving a trail of mucus, then kept crying. She didn't respond until the wails of the sirens reached her ears and her head snapped up. She stared into the distance, the entrance of the junkyard somewhere beyond the trash heaps. Eyes rounded, lips trembling, face blotchy red. Cinder's heart shriveled in on itself. She couldn't help herself. If she was going to catch it, she already had. She fell to her knees, wrapping Peony up in both arms. Her tool belt dug into her hip, but she ignored it as Peony grasped at her t-shirt, sobs renewed.
I'm so sorry. What will you tell Mom and Pearl?
Cinder bit her lips. I don't know. Then, the truth, I guess. Bile rose in her mouth. Maybe it was a sign. Maybe stomach sickness was a symptom. She looked down at her forearm, embracing Peony to her. Still no spots. Peony shoved her away, scooting back in the dirt.
Stay away. You might not be sick yet, but they would take you. You have to get out of here.
Cinder hesitated. She heard the crunch of treads over scattered aluminum and plastic. She didn't want to leave Peony, but what if she really hadn't caught it yet? She sat back on her heels, then clambered to her feet. Yellow lights were nearing them from the shadows. Cinder's right hand was sweating in its glove. Her breathing had shallowed again.
Peony, go! Go away!
Cinder stepped back. Back. Had the bleary sense to stop and pick up the folded mag belt. She moved toward the exit, her human leg as numb as the prosthesis. Peony's sobs chased after her. Three white androids met her around a corner. They had yellow sensors and red crosses painted on their heads, and two were pushing a hovering gurney between them. Are you the Leadimosis victim? One asked in a neutral voice, holding up an ID scanner. Cinder hid her wrist.
No, my sister, Lynn Peony. She's that way, to the left.
The medroids with the gurney wheeled away from her, down the path.
Have you had direct contact with the victim in the past 12 hours?
The remaining android asked. Cinder opened her mouth, hesitated. Guilt and fear curdled in her gut.
She could lie. There was no proof she had it yet. But if they took her to the quarantines, she didn't stand a chance. But if she went home, she could infect everyone. Audrey, Pearl, those screeching, laughing children rushing through the hallways. She could barely hear her own voice. Yes.
Are you showing symptoms?
No, I don't know. I feel lightheaded, but not...
She stopped herself. The medroid neared her, its treads grating on the dirty ground. Cinder stumbled away from it, but it said nothing, only inched closer until Cinder's calves were pressed against a rotting storage crate. It held up the ID scanner in one pronged hand, and then a third arm appeared from within its torso, a syringe in place of grippers. Cinder shuddered, but didn't resist, as it grabbed her right wrist and inserted the needle. She flinched, watching as dark liquid, almost black in the android's yellow light, was pulled up into the syringe. She was not afraid of needles, but the world began to tilt. The android removed it just in time for her to slump down onto the crate.
"What are you doing?"
she whispered.
"Initiating blood scan for letamosis-carrying pathogens."
Cinder heard a motor start up inside the android, faint beeps announcing each step. The android's light dimmed as its power source was diverted. She held her breath until her control panel kicked in and forced her lungs to contract.
"ID," said the android, holding the scanner out to her.
A red light passed over her wrist and the scanner beeped. The android stashed it away in its hollow torso. She wondered how long it would take for it to finish the scan and determine that she was a carrier, confirming that she was at fault. For everything. The sound of treads approached along the path. Cinder turned her head as the two androids appeared with Peony atop their gurney. She was sitting up with her hands wrapped around her knees. Swollen eyes wildly darted around the junkyard, as if searching for an escape, as if she'd stumbled into a nightmare. But she didn't try to run. No one ever put up a fight when being taken to the quarantines. Their eyes met. Cinder opened her mouth, but nothing came out. She tried to plead forgiveness with her eyes. The faintest of smiles touched Peony's lips. She raised a hand and waved with only her fingers. Cinder returned it, knowing it should be her. She had already outlived fate once. She should be the one being carted away. She should be the one dying. It should be her. It was about to be her. She tried to speak, to tell Peony that she would be right behind her. She wouldn't be alone. But then the android beeped.
"Scan complete. No letamosis-carrying pathogens detected. Subject is urged to stand 50 feet back from infected patient."
Cinder blinked. Relief and dread both squirmed inside her. She wasn't sick. She wasn't going to die. She wasn't going with Peony.
"We will alert you via comm when Lynn Peony enters the subsequent stages of the disease. Thank you for your cooperation."
Cinder wrapped her arms around herself and watched Peony lay down as she was carted away, curling up like a child on the gurney. Chapter 6. Cinder slinked through the balmy night, the sound of her boots shuffling across the concrete, as if both legs were made of steel. The empty night was a chorus of muted sounds in her head. The sandy crunching of Iko's treads, the sputtering of street lamps above them, the constant hum of the magnetic superconductor beneath the street. With every step, the wrench inside Cinder's calf clanked. It all dulled in comparison to the video replaying in her mind. Her interface did that sometimes, recording moments of strong emotion and replaying them over and over, like déjà vu, or when the last words of a conversation linger in the air long after silence has settled in. Usually, she could make the memory stop before it drove her crazy. But tonight, she didn't have the energy. The black splotch on Peony's skin. Her scream. The Medroid syringe dragging Cinder's blood from the flesh of her elbow. Peony, small and trembling on the gurney. Already dying. She stopped, clutching her stomach as nausea roiled up. Aiko paused a few paces ahead, shining her spotlight on Cinder's scrunched face.
Are you all right?
The light darted down the length of Cinder's body, and she was sure Aiko was searching for bruise-like rings, even though the Medroid had said she wasn't infected. Instead of answering, Cinder peeled off her gloves and shoved them into her back pocket. Her faintness passing, she leaned her shoulder against a street lamp and drank in the humid air. They'd made it home, almost. The Phoenix Tower apartments stood on the next corner, only the top floor catching the faint light from the crescent moon, the rest of the building cast in shadow. The windows were black, but for a handful of lights and some bluish-white glares from flickering net screens. Cinder counted floors, finding the windows to the kitchen and Audrey's bedroom. Though dim, a light was still on somewhere in the apartment. Audrey wasn't a night person, but perhaps she'd discovered that Peony was still out. Or perhaps Pearl was awake, working on a school project or calming friends late into the night. It was probably better this way. She didn't want to have to wake them. What am I going to tell them? Aiko's sensor was on the apartment building for a moment, then the ground, picking up the shuffled debris across the sidewalk. Cinder rubbed her sweaty palm on her pants and forced herself onward. Try as she might, suitable words would not come to her. Explanations, excuses. How do you tell a woman her daughter is dying? She swiped her ID and entered through the main door this time. The gray lobby was decorated only with a net screen that held announcements for the residents. A rise in maintenance fees, a petition for a new ID scanner at the front door, a lost cat. Then the elevator loud with the clunking of old machinery. The hallway was empty, save the man from apartment 1807 snoozing on his doorstep. Cinder had to tuck in his splayed arm so Aiko wouldn't crush it. Heavy breathing and the sweet aroma of rice wine wafted up. She hesitated in front of apartment 1820, heart pounding. She couldn't recall when the video of Peony had stopped repeating in her head, eclipsed by her harsh nerves. What was she going to say? Cinder bit her lip and held up her wrist for the scanner. The small light switched to green. She opened the door as quietly as possible. Brightness from the living room spilled into the dark hallway. Cinder caught a glimpse of the net screen, still showing footage of the market from earlier that day. The baker's booth going up in flames again and again. The screen was muted. Cinder entered the room, but halted mid-step. Aiko bumped against her leg. Facing her from the middle of the living room were three androids with red crosses painted on their spherical heads. Emergency Medroids. Behind them, Audrey in her silk bathrobe stood against the mantel, although the holographic fire was turned off. Pearl was still fully clothed, sitting on the sofa with her knees pulled up to her chin. They were both holding dry washcloths over their noses and eyeing Cinder with a mixture of repulsion and fear. Cinder's stomach clenched. She drew a half step back into the hallway, wondering which of them was sick. But she quickly realized that neither of them could be. The androids would have taken them immediately. They wouldn't be protecting their breath. The entire building would be on lockdown. She noticed a small bandage on Audrey's elbow. They'd already been tested. Cinder shifted her messenger bag, setting it on the ground, but kept the mag belt. Audrey cleared her throat and lowered the cloth to her sternum. She looked like a skeleton in the pale lighting, mealy skin and jutting bones, without makeup. Dark circles swelled beneath her bloodshot eyes. She'd been crying, but now her lips were set in a stiff line.
"I received a comm an hour ago," she said once the silence had congealed in the room. "It informed me that Peony was picked up in the Tai Hong District junkyard and taken..."
Her voice broke. She dropped her gaze, and when she looked up again, her eyes were flashing.
"But you know that already, don't you?"
Cinder shifted, trying not to look at the med droids. Without waiting for Cinder's answer, Audrey said,
"Aiko, you can begin disposing of Peony's things. Anything she wore in the past week can go into waste collection. But take it to the alley yourself. I don't want it clogging up the chutes. I suppose everything else can be sold at the market."
Her voice was sharp and steady, as if this list had been repeating in her head from the moment she'd received the news.
"Yes, Lin Jie," said Aiko, wheeling back into the hallway.
Cinder stayed, frozen, both hands clutching the mag belt like a shield. Though the android was incapable of ignoring Audrey's commands, it was clear from her slowness that she didn't want to leave Cinder alone so long as the medroids were watching with their hollow yellow sensors.
"Why," said Audrey, wringing the washcloth, "was my youngest daughter at the Tai Hong District junkyard this evening?"
Cinder drew the mag belt against her, lining it up from shoulder to toe. Made of the same steel as her hand, and equally tarnished, it felt like an extension of her.
"She came with me to look for a mag belt."
She drew in a heavy breath. Her tongue felt swollen, her throat closing in.
"I'm so sorry. I didn't... I saw the spots and I called the emergency hover. I didn't know what to do."
Tears puddled in Audrey's eyes, briefly, before she blinked them away. She dropped her head, staring down at the twisted cloth. Her body sagged against the mantle.
"I wasn't sure that you would come back here, Cinder. I expected to receive another comm at any minute, telling me that my ward had also been taken."
Audrey pulled her shoulders back, lifting her gaze. The weakness passed. Her dark eyes hardened.
"These med droids tested Pearl and myself. The plague has not yet spread to either of us."
Cinder started to nod, relieved, but Audrey continued.
"Tell me, Cinder, if Pearl and I are not carrying the disease, where did Peony get it from?"
"I don't know."
"You don't know? But you did know about the outbreak in the market today."
Cinder's lips parted.
"Of course. The cloths. The medroids. They thought she was infected." "I don't understand you, Cinder. How could you be so selfish?"
She jerked her head no.
"They tested me too. At the junkyard. I don't have it. I don't know where she got it from."
She held out her arm, showing the bruise blooming on her inner elbow.
"They can check me again if they want to."
One of the medroids showed its first sign of life, shining the light at the small red spot where the needle had pricked her. But they didn't move, and Audrey didn't encourage them. Instead, she turned her attention to a small framed port screen on the mantel, shuffling through pictures of Pearl and Peony in their childhood. Pictures at their old house, the one with the garden. Pictures with Audrey before she'd lost her smile. Pictures with their father.
"I'm so sorry," said Cinder. "I love her too."
Audrey squeezed the frame. "Don't insult me," she said, sliding the frame closer to her.
"Do your kind even know what love is? Can you feel anything at all? Or is it just programmed?"
She was talking to herself, but the words stung. Cinder risked a glance at Pearl, who was still sitting on the sofa, with her face half hidden behind her knees. but she was no longer holding the washcloth to her face. When she saw Cinder looking at her, she turned her gaze to the floor. Cinder flexed her fingers against the mag belt.
Of course I know what love is.
And sadness, too. She wished she could cry to prove it.
Good. Then you will understand that I am doing what a mother must do to protect my children.
Audrey turned the frame face down on the mantel. On the couch, Pearl turned her face away, pressing her cheek against her knees. A tendril of fear curled in Cinder's stomach.
Audrey? It has been 5 years since you became a part of this household, Cinder. 5 years since Garen left you to me. I still don't know what made him do it. Don't know why he felt obligated to travel to Europe, of all places, to find some mutant to take care of. He never explained it to me. Perhaps he would have someday. But I never wanted you. You know that.
Cinder pursed her lips. The blank-faced medroids leered up at her. She did know it. But she didn't think Audrey had ever put it so clearly.
Garen wanted you to be taken care of, so I've done my best. Even when he died, even when the money ran out, even when everything fell apart.
Her voice cracked, and she pressed one palm firmly against her mouth. Cinder watched her shoulders tremble, listened to the short gasps of breath as she tried to stifle the sobs.
But Garen would have agreed. Peony comes first. Our girls come first.
Cinder started at the raised voice. She could hear the justification in Audrey's tone, the determination. Don't leave me with this thing. She shuddered.
Audrey, if it weren't for you, Garen would still be alive, and Peony...
No, it's not my fault. Cinder spotted a flash of white, saw Aiko loitering in the hallway, uncertain. Her censer had gone nearly black. Cinder searched for her voice. Her pulse was throbbing, white spots flickering across her vision. A red warning flickered in the corner of her eye, a recommendation that she calm down.
I didn't ask to be made like this. I didn't ask for you or anybody to adopt me. This isn't my fault.
And it isn't my fault, either,
Audrey lashed out, shoving the net screen off its brackets with one shove. It fell and crashed, taking two of her husband's achievement plaques down with it. Bits of plastic ricocheted across the worn carpet. Cinder jumped back, but the frenzy fled as fast as it had come. Audrey's ragged breath was already slowing. She was always so careful not to disturb the neighbors. Not to be noticed, not to cause a commotion, not to do anything that could ruin their reputation, even now.
Cinder, said Audrey, chafing her fingers with the washcloth as if she could erase her lost temper. You will be going with these medroids. Don't make a scene.
The floor shifted.
What? Why? Because we all have a duty to do what we can, and you know what high demand there is for your type, especially now.
She paused. Her face had gone pink and mottled. We can still help Peony. They just need cyborgs to find a cure.
You volunteered me for plague research?
Her mouth could barely form the words.
What else was I to do?
Cinder's jaw hung. She shook her head, dumbly, as all three yellow sensors focused on her.
But nobody survives the testing. How could you? Nobody survives the plague. If you care for Peony as much as you claim to, you'll do as I say. If you hadn't been so selfish, you would have volunteered yourself after you left the market today, before coming here and ruining my family. Again. But... Take her away. She's yours.
Cinder was too stunned to move as the nearest android held a scanner up to her wrist. It beeped and she flinched back.
Lynn Cinder, it said in its metallic voice, Your voluntary sacrifice is admired and appreciated by all citizens of the Eastern Commonwealth. A payment will be made to your loved ones as a show of gratitude for your contribution to our ongoing studies.
Her grip tightened on the mag belt. No. That's what this is really about, isn't it? You don't care about Peony. You don't care about me. You just want the stupid payout.
Audrey's eyes widened, her temples pulling taut against her skull. She crossed the room in two steps, the back of her hand whipping across Cinder's face. Cinder fell against the doorframe and pressed a hand to her cheek.
Take her, said Audrey. Get her out of my sight. I didn't volunteer. You can't take me against my will.
The android was unperturbed. We have been authorized by your legal guardian to take you into custody through the use of force if necessary.
Cinder curled her fingers, balling a fist against her ear. You can't force me to be a test subject. Yes, said Audrey, her own breathing labored. I can, so long as you are under my guardianship.
You don't really think this will save Peony, so don't pretend this is about her. She has days. The chances of them finding a cure before...
Then my only mistake was in waiting too long to be rid of you, Audrey said, running the washcloth between her fingers. Believe me, Cinder, you are a sacrifice I will never regret.
The treads of one of the medroids clattered against the carpet. Are you prepared to come with us?
Cinder pursed her lips and lowered her hand from her face. She glared at Audrey, but she could find no sympathy in her stepmother's eyes. A new hatred boiled up inside her. Warnings flashed in her vision.
No, I'm not!
Cinder swung the mag belt, smacking it hard against the android's cranium. The robot fell to the floor, treads spinning midair.
I won't go. Scientists have done enough to me already.
A second android rolled toward her. Initiating procedure 240B, forcible removal of cyborg draft subject.
Cinder sneered and shoved the end of the mag belt at the android's sensor, shattering the lens and thrusting it onto its back. She spun around to face the last android, already thinking how she would run from the apartment, wondering if it would be too risky to call a hover, wondering where to find a knife for cutting out her ID chip. Otherwise, they were sure to track her. Wondering if Aiko would be fast enough to follow, wondering if her legs could carry her all the way to Europe. The medroid approached too fast. She stumbled, changing the trajectory of the mag belt, but the android's metal pincers grasped her wrist first. Electrodes fired. Electricity sizzled through Cinder's nervous system. The voltage overwhelmed her wiring. Cinder's lips parted, but the cry stuck in the back of her throat. She dropped the mag belt and collapsed. Red warnings flashed across her vision until, in an act of cyborg self-preservation, her brain forced her to shut down.
Chapter 7 Dr. Dimitri Erland dragged his finger across the port screen, scanning the patient's records. Male, 32 years old. He had a child, but no mention of a spouse. Unemployed. Turned cyborg after a debilitating work-related accident 3 years ago. No doubt spent most of his savings on the surgery. He'd traveled all the way from Tokyo. So many strikes against him, and Dr. Erland couldn't explain that to anybody. Sticking his tongue out between his teeth, he raspberried his disappointment.
What do you think, doctor? Asked today's assistant, a dark-skinned girl whose name he could never recall and who was taller than he by at least 4 inches. He liked to give her tasks that kept her seated while she worked.
Dr. Erland filled his lungs slowly, then released them all at once, changing the display to a more relevant diagram of the patient's body. He had a mere 6.4% makeup, his right foot, a bit of wiring, and a thumbnail-size control panel embedded in his thigh.
Too old, he said, tossing the port onto the countertop before the observation window. On the other side of the glass, the patient was laid out on the lab table. He looked peaceful, but for madly tapping fingers against the plastic cushions. His feet were bare, but skin grafting covered the prosthesis. "Too old?" said the assistant. She stood and came to the window, waving her own port screen at him. 32 is too old now? We can't use him. She bunched her lips to one side. Doctor, this will be the 6th draft subject you've turned away this month. We can't afford to keep doing this. He has a child, a son. It says so right here. Yeah, a child who'll be able to afford dinner tonight because his daddy was lucky enough to fit our subject profile. To fit our profile? With a 6.4% ratio? It's better than testing on people. She dropped the port screen beside a tray of petri dishes. You really want to let him go? Dr. Erland glared into the quarantine room, a growl humming in the back of his throat. Pulling his shoulders back, he tugged down on his lab coat. Placebo him. But he's not sick! Yes, but if we don't give him anything, the Treasury will wonder what we're doing down here. Now give him a placebo and submit a report so he can be on his way. The girl huffed and went to grab a labeled vial from a shelf. What are we doing down here? Dr. Erland held up a finger, but the girl gave him such an irritated look that he forgot what he'd been about to say. What's your name again? She rolled her eyes. Honestly, I've only been your assistant every Monday for the past 4 months. She turned her back on him, her long black braid whipping against her hip. Dr. Erland's eyebrows drew together as he stared at the braid, watching as it wound itself up, curling in on itself. A shiny black snake rearing its head, hissing at him, ready to strike. He slammed shut his eyes and counted to 10. When he opened them again, the braid was just a braid. Shiny black hair. Harmless. Pulling off his hat, Dr. Erland took a moment to rub at his own hair, gray and considerably less full than his assistant's. The visions were getting worse. The door to the lab room opened. Doctor. He jolted and stuffed his head back into the hat. Yes, he said, grabbing his port screen. Lee, another assistant, lingered with his hand on the doorknob. Dr. Erland had always liked Lee, who was also tall but not as tall as the girl. There's a volunteer waiting in 6D, said Lee. Someone they brought in last night. A volunteer? Said the girl. Been a while since we had one of those. Lee pulled a port screen from his breast pocket. She's young, too, a teenager. We haven't run her diagnostics yet, but I think she's going to have a pretty high ratio. No skin grafting. Dr. Erland perked up, scratching his temple with the corner of his port. A teenager, you say? How? He fumbled for an appropriate descriptor. Unusual? Coincidental? Lucky? Suspicious? Said the girl, her voice low. Dr. Erland turned, found her glower bearing down on him. Suspicious. Whatever do you mean? She perched against the edge of the counter, diminishing her height so she was eye level, but she still seemed intimidating with her folded arms and unimpressed scowl. Just that you're always more than willing to placebo the male cyborgs that come in, but you perk right up when you catch word of a girl. Especially the young ones. He opened his mouth, closed it, then started again. The younger, the healthier, he said. The healthier, the fewer complications we'll have. And it isn't my fault the draft keeps picking on females. Fewer complications. Right. Either way, they're going to die. Yes, well, thank you for the optimism. He gestured to the man on the other side of the glass. Placebo, please. Come join us when you've finished. He stepped out of the lab room, Lee at his side, and cupped a hand around his mouth. What is her name again? Fatine? Fatine. I can never remember that. One of these days I'll be forgetting my own name. Lee chuckled, and Dr. Erland was glad he'd made the joke. People seemed to overlook an old man losing his mind if he occasionally made light of it. The hallway was empty, save for two medroids lingering by the stairwell, awaiting orders. It was a short walk to Lab Room 6D. Dr. Erland pulled a stylus from behind his ear and tapped at his port, downloading the information Lee had sent him. The new patient's profile popped up. Lynn Cinder, licensed mechanic, ID number 00979173305, born 29 November 109 TE, 0 media hits, resident of New Beijing, Eastern Commonwealth, ward of Lynn Audrey. Lee opened the door to the lab. Tucking the stylus back behind his ear, Dr. Erlan entered the room with twitching fingers. The girl was lying on the table on the other side of the viewing window. The sterile quarantine room was so bright he had to squint into the glare. A medroid was just capping a plastic vial filled with blood and plunking it onto the chute, sending it off to the blood lab. The girl's hands and wrists had been fastened with metal bands. Her left hand was steel, tarnished and dark between the joints, as if it needed a good cleaning. Her pant legs had been rolled up her calves, revealing one human leg and one synthetic. "Is she plugged in yet?" he asked, slipping his port into his coat pocket. "Not yet," said Lee, "but look at her." Dr. Erlan grunted, staving off his disappointment.
"Yes, her ratio should be impressive, but it's not the best quality, is it?"
"Not the exterior, maybe, but you should have seen her wiring. Auto control and four-grid nervous system."
Dr. Erland quirked an eyebrow, then lowered it just as fast.
"Has she been unruly?"
"The medroids had trouble apprehending her. She disabled two of them with a belt or something before they were able to shock her system. She's been out all night."
"But she volunteered?"
"Her legal guardian did. She suspects the patient has already had contact with the disease. A sister, taken in yesterday."
Dr. Erlan pulled the microphone across the desk.
"Wakey, wakey, sleeping beauty," he sang, rapping on the glass.
"They stunned her with 200 volts, said Lee, "but I expect her to be coming around any minute now."
Dr. Erland hooked his thumbs on his coat pockets.
"Well, we don't need consciousness. Let's go ahead and get started."
"Oh, good," Fatine said in the doorway. Her heels clipped against the tile floor as she entered the lab room. "Glad you found one to suit your tastes."
Dr. Erland pressed a finger to the glass.
"Young," he said,
eyeing the metallic sheen of the girl's limbs.
"Healthy."
With a sneer, Fatine claimed a seat before a net screen that projected the cyborg's records. "If 32 is old and decrepit, what does that make you, old man?"
"Very valuable in the antique market."
Dr. Erland lowered his lips to the mic.
"Med, ready the ratio detector, if you please."
Chapter 8. She was lying on a burning pyre, hot coals beneath her back, flames, smoke, blisters burbling across her skin. Her leg and hand were gone, leaving stumps where the surgeons had attached her prosthesis. Dead wires dangled from them. She tried to crawl, but was as useless as an upended turtle. She reached out with her one hand, trying to drag her body from the fire, but the bed of coals stretched off into the horizon. She'd had this dream before, 100 times. This time, though, it was different. Instead of being all alone, like usual, she was surrounded. Other crippled victims writhed among the coals, moaning, begging for water. They were all missing limbs. Some were nothing more than a head and a torso and a mouth, pleading, pleading. Cinder shrank away from them, noticing bluish splotches on their skin, their necks, their stump thighs, their shriveled wrists.
She saw Peony, screaming, accusing Cinder. She had done this to her. She had brought the plague to their household. It was all her fault. Cinder opened her mouth to beg for forgiveness, but she stopped when she saw sight of her one good hand. Her skin was covered in blue spots. The fire began to melt the diseased skin away, revealing metal and wires beneath the flesh. She met Peony's gaze again. Her sister opened her mouth, but her voice sounded awkward, deep.
"Ready the ratio detector, if you please."
The words hummed like bees in Cinder's ears. Her body jolted, but she couldn't move. Her limbs were too heavy. The smell of smoke lingered in her nostrils, but the heat from the flames was dying away, leaving only her sore, burning back. Peony faded away. The pit of coals melted into the ground. Green text scrolled along the bottom corner of Cinder's vision. Beyond the darkness, she heard the familiar rumble of android treads.
Iko?
Diagnostics check complete. All systems stabilized. Rebooting in 3, 2, 1. Something clattered above her head. The hum of electricity. Cinder felt her finger twitch. The closest thing to a flinch her body was capable of. The darkness began to warm, a subtle crimson brightness beyond her eyelids. She forced her eyes open, squinting into harsh fluorescence.
Ah, Juliet awakens.
She shut her eyes again and let them adjust. She tried to bring her hand up to cover them, but something had her locked in place. Panic raced along her nerves. She opened her eyes again and turned her head, straining to see who had spoken. A mirror filled the wall. Her own face stared wild-eyed back at her. Her ponytail was a mess, dull, tangled, in need of a wash. Her skin was too pale, almost translucent, as if the voltage had drained her of more than energy. They'd taken her gloves and her boots and rolled her pant legs up. She was not looking at a girl in the mirror. She was looking at a machine.
"How are you feeling, Miss Lin?"
said a disembodied voice in an accent she couldn't pinpoint. European? American? She wet her parched lips and craned her neck to peer at the android behind her. It was fidgeting with a small machine on a countertop, amid a dozen other machines. Medical equipment, surgical toys, IVs, needles. Cinder realized she was attached to one of the machines by wired sensors on her chest and forehead. A net screen hung on the wall to her right, displaying her name and ID number. Otherwise, the room was empty.
"If you'll just hold still and cooperate, we won't take up too much of your time," said the voice.
Cinder scowled.
"Very funny," she said, forcibly straining against the metal bands. "I didn't sign up for this. I didn't volunteer for your stupid tests."
A silence. Something beeped behind her. Peering overhead, she saw the android pulling two prongs attached to thin cables out of a machine. A chill crawled up her spine.
"Keep that thing away from me!" "This won't hurt a bit, Miss Lin." "I don't care! Stay out of my head! I'm not one of your lemming volunteers!"
The voice clucked.
"I have a signature here from a Miss Lin Adri. You must know her." "She's not my mother! She's just..."
Her heart lurched. "Your legal guardian?" Cinder thumped her head against the padded exam table. Tissue paper crinkled beneath her.
"This isn't right." "Don't fret, Miss Lin. You are doing your fellow citizens a great service by being here."
She glared at the mirror, hoping she was glaring at the jerk on the other side.
"Yeah? And what did they ever do for me?"
Instead of answering, he said simply, "Mid, please proceed." Treads wheeled toward her. Cinder jerked away, twisting her neck in an effort to avoid the cold prongs. but the android gripped her scalp with mechanical strength and forced her right cheek to the tissue paper. She thrashed her arms and legs, but it was useless. Perhaps if she fought hard enough, they would knock her out again. She wasn't sure if that would be better or worse, but the memory of the pit of burning embers halted her struggling. Her heart galloped as the android undid the latch in the back of her head. She shut her eyes, trying to imagine herself anywhere but this cold, sterile room. She didn't want to think about the two metal prongs being inserted into her control panel, her brain. But it was impossible not to think about it, as she heard them being maneuvered into place. Nausea. She swallowed back the bile. She heard the click of the prongs. She couldn't feel anything. There were no nerve endings. But a shudder ripped through her, sending goosebumps down her arms. Her retina display informed her that she was now connected to ratio detector 2.3, scanning. 2%, 7%, 16%. The machine hummed on the table behind her. Cinder imagined a subtle current of electricity slipping along her wires. She felt it most where the skin joined with metal, a tingle where the blood had been cut off. 63%. Cinder clenched her jaw. Someone had been there before, in her head. A fact never forgotten, always ignored. Some surgeon, some stranger, opening her skull and inserting their made-up system of wires and conductors while she had lain helpless beneath them. Someone had altered her brain. Someone had altered her. 78%. She choked on the scream that tried to burble out of her. It was painless. Painless. But someone was in her head, inside her. An invasion, a violation. She tried to jerk away, but the android held her firm.
Get out!
The scream echoed back to her off the cold walls. Scan completed. The medroid disconnected the prongs. Cinder lay trembling, her heart crushed against her rib cage. The medroid didn't bother to close the panel in the back of her head. Cinder hated it. Hated Audrey. Hated the mad voice behind the mirror. Hated the nameless people who had turned her into this.
"Thank you for that stellar cooperation," said the disembodied voice. "It will take just a minute for us to record your cybernetic makeup, and then we'll proceed. Please make yourself comfortable."
Cinder ignored him, face turned away from the mirror. It was one of those rare moments she was glad to have no tear ducts. Otherwise, she was sure she'd be a sniveling disaster, and she would have hated herself all the more for it. She could still hear voices over the speakers, but their words consisted of muttered scientific lingo she didn't understand. The medroid was bustling around behind her, putting the ratio detector away, readying her next instrument of torture. Cinder opened her eyes. The net screen on the wall had changed, no longer showing her life stats. Her ID number was still at the top, headlining a holographic diagram of a girl. A girl full of wires. It was as if someone had chopped her down the middle, dividing her front half from her back half, and then put her cartoonish image into a medical textbook. Her heart, her brain, her intestines, her muscles, her blue veins, her control panel, her synthetic hand and leg, wires that trailed from the base of her skull all the way down her spine and out to her prosthetic limbs. The scar tissue where flesh met metal. A small dark square in her wrist. Her ID chip. But those things she had known. Those things she had expected. She had not known about the metal vertebrae along her spine. Or the four metal ribs. Or the synthetic tissue around her heart. Or the metal splints along the bones in her right leg. The bottom of the screen was labeled ratio 36.28%. She was 36.28% not human.
Thank you for your patience, came the voice, startling her. As you've no doubt noticed, you are quite the exemplary model of modern science, young lady.
Leave me alone, she whispered.
What's going to happen next is that the Medroid is going to inject you with a 1/10 solution of Lethemosis microbes. They've been magnetically tagged, and so will appear bright green on the holographic diagram, in real time. Once your body enters into the first stage of the disease, your immune system will kick in and try to destroy the microbes. But it will fail. Your body will then proceed to stage 2 of the disease, which is, of course, where we see the bruise-like spots on your skin. At that point, we will inject you with our most recent batch of antibodies, which, if we've succeeded, will permanently disable the pathogens. Abracadabra, you'll be home in time for dumplings. Are you ready?
Cinder stared at the holograph and imagined watching herself die in real time.
How many different batches of antibodies have you gone through? Med?
27, said the Medroid.
But, said the foreign voice, they die a little slower each time.
Cinder crinkled the tissue paper beneath her fingertips.
I believe we are all ready. Med, please proceed with syringe A.
Something clattered on the table, and then the android was beside her. A panel was open in its torso, revealing a third arm ending in a syringe, like those in the emergency androids. Cinder tried to pull away, but she had nowhere to go. Imagining the headless voice on the other side of the mirror, watching, laughing at her vain struggles, she froze and tried her best to hold still, to be strong, to not think about what they were doing to her. The android's prongs were cold as they gripped Cinder's elbow, still bruised from having blood taken twice in the past 12 hours. She grimaced, muscles pulling taut to her bones.
It is easier to find the vein if you are relaxed, the android said in a hollow voice.
Cinder tensed her arms' muscles until they were shaking. A snort came through the speakers, as if the disembodied voice was amused by her antics. The android was well programmed. Despite her rebellion, the needle punctured her vein on the first try. Cinder gasped. A pinch. Just a pinch. The fight drained out of her as the clear liquid ran in.
Book 2. There was no bed for her, and at night, when she had worked herself weary, she had to sleep by the hearth in the ashes.
Chapter 9.
Successful transmittal of the carriers, said Lee. All reactions appear normal. Blood pressure stabilizing. Signs of stage 2 expected around 0100 tomorrow morning.
He clapped his hands and spun in his chair to face Dr. Erland and Fatine.
That means we can all go home and take naps, right?
Dr. Erland sniffed. He traced his finger along the screen before him, slowly turning the holographic image of the patient. 20 little green lights were flickering along her bloodstream, spreading slowly through her veins. But he had seen that before, dozens of times. It was the rest of her that held his interest now.
Have you ever seen anything like her before? Said Fatine, standing beside him. The sales from her control panel alone will cover the family payoff.
Dr. Erlon tried to give her an unimpressed glare, but it was less than effective when he had to tilt his head back to look up at her. Snarling, he scooted away and turned back to the holograph. He tapped on the top of the glowing spine, where 2 metal vertebrae connected and enlarged the image. What had been a small shadow before now appeared too substantial, too geometric. Fatine crossed her arms and bent down.
What is that?
I'm not sure, said Erland, rotating the image for a better view.
It looks like a chip, said Lee, getting up to join them.
On her spine? Said Fatine.
What good would that do her?
I'm just saying that's what it looks like. Or maybe they messed up on the vertebrae and had to re-weld it or something.
Fatine pointed. This is more than just welding, though. You can see the ridges here, like it's plugged into... She hesitated. They both faced Dr. Erland, whose eyes were following a small green dot that had just floated into the holograph's viewing range.
Like a vicious green firefly, he muttered to himself.
Doctor, said Fatine, snapping his attention back to her. Why would she have a chip plugged into her nervous system? He cleared his throat.
Perhaps, he said, pulling spectacles from his breast pocket and sliding them onto his nose. Her nervous system experienced traumatic damage.
From a hover accident? Said Lee.
Spinal injuries used to be quite common before computer-operated navigation took over.
Dr. Erland scratched his nail across the screen, pulling the holograph back to show her whole torso. He squinted into the lenses, his fingers flittering over the image.
What are you looking for? Asked Fatine.
Dr. Erland dropped his hand and glanced at the immobile girl on the other side of the window.
Something is missing.
The scar tissue around her wrist, the dull sheen of her synthetic foot, the grease beneath her fingertips.
What? Said Lee. What's missing?
Dr. Erland stepped closer to the window and pressed a sweating palm against the counter.
A little green firefly.
Behind him, Lee and Fatine traded glances before spinning back to the holograph. They each began their count, him silently, her out loud, but Fatine paused on number 12 with a gasp.
One just disappeared,
she said, pointing to an empty spot on the girl's right thigh.
A microbe. It was right there. I was looking right at it, and now it's gone.
As they watched, two more dots flickered and disappeared, like burned-out light bulbs. Lee grabbed his port screen off a desk and pounded his fingers against it,